before we started this, you know, there's a lot of uncertainty out there, and where there's uncertainty, there's need, and where there's need, there's tremendous opportunity. So I truly believe that you were, I were made for such a time as this. I'm telling everybody right now.
Another episode of the Automate and Grow podcast. My guest today is Chaz Horn from Mastery of B2B Sales. And Chaz has a five pillars to growing your business on LinkedIn program and podcast. And we're going to talk to him today in these exciting times, which is a global pandemic.
Boom.
Right in the middle.
Yes, we are. Crazy times for sure.
Thank you for joining me amidst so much chaos.
Yes.
So Chaz, tell us, I guess first off is, you know, who do you typically work with and what do you help them with?
Yeah. So just to go first to what you're saying, Michael, as far as the times we're living in, and I wish we were recording some of our off-camera conversation, because Michael and I are having a really good conversation before we started this. You know, there's a lot of uncertainty out there, and where there's uncertainty, there's need, and where there's need, there's tremendous opportunity. So I truly believe that you were, I were made for such a time as this. I'm telling everybody right now. So I'll get to your question here in a second.
I think you're answering it.
I appreciate it. So it's time to serve, listen, innovate, and execute. And if you saw the Italian business, it was like a couple weeks ago. I'm not sure if you saw this in the news. Italy got it worse than anyone else with the coronavirus.
Yeah.
And in the hospitals, they were missing this key component within a ventilator or respirator. I'm not sure. I'm not medical sales. And this company, which had nothing to do with medical products, purchased a 3D printer, took it to the hospital, and they configured it to create these things. And as of last week, there were 19 lives saved because of that. And so there is that need in the marketplace today to be like that Italian business that saw a need and they served them, they listened and they heard what the need was, and then they innovated and executed. And so what we do is we help businesses eliminate their sales and marketing challenges. You know, to do that, you need to obviously have a marketing strategy and you need to have a sales process. So what we do is one congruent ideology. I used to use the word system, but it seems a little bit antiquated, Michael. And so I was just doing like a synonym search. I'm like, ideology, I like that. So we're one ideology, which has the five pillars to scale your business on LinkedIn, and then a seamless process to transition that to a qualified prospect and a qualified client. And so that's what we do in a nutshell. We build a foundation first with companies to help them understand what they do, who they serve, where the clients are without them, who they work with, who they don't, and how they take them through the process. When they have clarity there, they can create a value proposition that communicates short, succinct, and powerfully to those people in their audience or those people that they're marketing to. Does that make sense? Did I miss anything?
No, totally. I think they hit it on the head. And I think what you're saying is important because it's probably very important right now to have two things. One is to be clear about what value you bring and to the person that you're going to help. But two is in the context of the stresses that are probably a little bit more obvious right now. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of times this is the challenge sometimes you have with marketing on whether it's LinkedIn or anything, and especially business to business, is you're trying to articulate what you think the person you serve's problem is. But I think right now there's some pretty obvious problems that everybody's stressed out about.
Yeah, most definitely.
Yeah. And so it's probably important right now more than ever to not retract, right?
Exactly. Yeah. This is the time to really move forward. In case you're a cool story with you.
Sure.
Okay. So in the late 70s, my mom was raising three boys. She was an art teacher making around 7K. And that's not a lot of money. She didn't get any financial support. So she went into real estate. And those of you who, or you can do a Google search away, interest rates were anywhere from like 16 to 20%. If you can imagine having a mortgage at 16 or 20%, you know, everyone was getting out of real estate. She was only making $7K a year. So she was getting into real estate. And I remember her, because I heard her like one night, some noise. My mom was very proper. She didn't like to show her emotions. She would never cry in front of anybody. So I heard a noise. I put my ear next to her door at night and she was crying. And so that next day, I was kind of worried. I saw in the Cleveland Plain Dealer, which is like the kind of the Cleveland paper, like the New York Times equivalent in Cleveland, Ohio, where I grew up. I was asking my mom, what's going on? You know, I was concerned, her crying. And she goes, you don't understand. And this is what I've taken through my entire life. You don't understand. All the bad realtors are getting out. There's just that much more business for me. I don't like that there's problems and people are suffering and there's some people that are dying. I can't control what's outside. I can only control what is it, my behaviors and how I respond, not react. And so there's a tremendous opportunity to serve people, and I love what I do. And when I get to serve someone, help them uncover a need, and right now there's a huge need out there for them to understand, you have to serve, listen, innovate, and execute, and then we can show you how to do that and work through this process together. But just learning to work through troubles, that when you focus on solutions and not the problem, that you could be part of the solution in the fix overall within our small sphere of influence.
Well, I think that's really, those are like almost, you know, they've been words that probably would have been very helpful in a bunch of different, you know, stages or since then, right? There's been so many very traumatic events that we've had to deal with collectively that as an individual, it's easy to get caught up, and maybe more now just because of the volume of bad news outlets.
Right.
What you're saying is you need to be resilient and think and see the opportunity and pursue it.
Exactly.
And that'll, first of all, that'll buoy you through the bad times, which you might have your own, and definitely people around you are going to. And then the flip side is eventually things will turn, right?
Most definitely. Well, it's like, you know, I was sharing with somebody, you know, what's the worst possible case scenario? I mean, well, we could die and be, you know, and obviously if like we're here for like 2 weeks or something and the world's going to end, then that's one thing. And I don't think the world's going to end. I think we're going to come out of this. You see with China, it's been a few months.
Yep.
I believe we jumped on it pretty quickly.
Very
and it's not a political statement. I mean, we shut down the entire country in a matter of how quickly was that?
Oh, it was,
I mean,
like a week,
March Madness, NBA, yeah, all those crazy different things, schools out. And so, and now pretty much everywhere, people are said to just shelter, you know, like where I am, it's no more than 10 people. May has changed and said like zero people. And don't go out unless you have to.
Right.
And so I believe, and then we're getting into warmer temperatures. And again, I'm not a medical person, but I don't believe viruses. The reason why flu season is where it is, it's like the seasons are colder and those things, they live longer.
For sure.
And with the heat coming up, so hopefully this will be eradicated. That's what I'm hoping and praying for. And I'm behaving like it will. If I just like,
yeah, you can get crushed by it.
Exactly.
Well, I think what's different about this too is that there is an obvious light at the end of the tunnel, which is this: it's not going to last forever, and there's measures in place, and there's an example of what happens when you deal with it and you don't.
Right.
Unfortunately, there wasn't a lot of planning around what to do to prop up people, and now it's like scramble, which is very disappointing, obviously, but I guess not surprising. You know, it is what it is. So I think for individuals, what we're saying is, well, first of all, there's going to be people that were doing one thing, either one business or one job before this,
mm-hmm,
being impacted, and they're going to make some decisions going forward that are probably different, right?
Right.
And some of those
most
people,
definitely.
And I think we saw this in 08 where, you know, there's people that started businesses out of necessity or, almost being fed up with the uncertainty of what they were doing before, right?
Yeah.
So I think that's probably going to happen again.
Cool recession story. Great Recession. That's what they called it, isn't 2007, 2008?
For sure.
So I was an employee back then working for a small distributor, fasteners, nuts and bolts, okay? Bottom of the totem pole as far as priority for manufacturers, but they need them. And so 70% of our competition went out of business then, okay? Wow. And the reason being is I talked about, you know, this learning from my mom in the 70s, and I worked for someone who was a former Marine who was looking to, you know, adapt during those times. And so working with him, for him, I adapted from what I've learned my entire life, and we went to our clients. And we did. We served them. We created a scorecard. We shored up our relationship by saying, okay, these are the things we're doing for you. We used that scorecard to leverage to bring C-level people into the conversation who didn't even know about us. We would have a conversation about the good, the bad, and the ugly, just totally open. In businesses like now, people are open to have in-depth conversations with you. And so if you go not to sell, but to serve and to listen to them, with the scorecard, we actually grew sales with our current clients with $3.9 million in a 12-month period by using that growing business just with current clients. And after the recessions, we were, a force to be reckoned with because we adapted in that time by listening to our clients, took that information, and we no longer sold nuts and bolts. It was about lowering the total cost of inventory and increasing the production rate, which is a whole different thing. Our gross sales percentage was 43%. Most of the people in the industry were like 30 to 33%.
Wow, that's a big difference.
Yep.
That's like 25%. And that, it's interesting because I think people are, first of all, if you're in any sort of customer facing role right now, and particularly if you're responsible for reaching out to customers, in good times, sometimes it's tough to get their attention, right?
Yes.
And that hides problems, or you don't care about those problems. But I think we were saying this off camera, which is I feel very focused all of a sudden. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people are too. It's like triage, right? It's like, okay, I just got to do this thing. And this is what I'm communicating. Like, it's almost like being very, you can be very, very clear about what you should be saying. So I think almost that uncertainty of even what to say and what to talk about and what to ask about, and to break through, like, how would you say it? Not apathy, but almost apathy, right? Whereas now I think people, to your point, are vulnerable.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're open to legitimate help, and they're also sensitive to really bad help.
That is such a great point, Michael. We have a BS, barometer when we're around people, because in the United States, and this is true mostly worldwide as well now, is people have all their walls up. They don't want to be sold.
Right.
If they come and because they don't want to be sold and they see how bad it's been, people trying to sell them something, they will buy if they see someone that's transparent and authentic. Because they can see what most companies are doing is just trying to sell, get them to close in the process. And it's all about making that sale. If you just go like, here's the first step in our sales process, intention. And I used to think of this as being a little fluffy, and it revolutionized my thinking process. The first step is in intention. And when you go with the intention to serve and not sell, it changes the conversation. And when you look to help them, and that doesn't mean to be a wimp, wet noodle, just, okay, so if you don't use us, you'll be out of business in 30 days, but you want to think about it for 5 weeks,
Yeah, false scarcity, right?
Right. Sometimes you have to have a come to Jesus. It's like, Dan, take me out of the equation. If you don't do something right here and now, you have big problems. It's costing you this. It's preventing you from getting here. Okay, I'm here to help you. So you got to make a decision. Again, take me out of the equation. What are you going to do?
Right.
You haven't been thinking about it just since we've been talking about it. You, as you said, for the last 2 years, you've been talking about all these different instances. You've been thinking about it for a long time. Now it's time to, if you want your business to survive, now is the time.
So like I think of, some feedback there. I think of, you know, I wrote a book and have a podcast called Automate and Grow.
Right.
And I think that there's been overall a trend towards digital. And that's fine. But now we're seeing what happens when you are thrusting people home to work from home, and it's an adjustment. And there's not necessarily the infrastructure internally to work in a way that is not dependent upon physical locations.
Right.
And those businesses that are most impacted right now haven't really addressed that. They're probably the most rooted in an older business model.
Right.
And I think one of the things that has clued me in is like, wow, I should have been even more aggressive on this message to people. Because if they had listened and more people had listened, they're probably in a really good spot. Like I work from the home a lot or at a co-working spot.
Right.
So all that shuts down. I see people struggling with stuff that, you know, they could have dealt with just by proactively saying this is a better business model.
Right.
And
I think,
so to your point, like I almost feel bad that I wasn't more aggressive about that message.
Yeah, it's hard because hindsight's 2020. We were talking about this before we started this. Hindsight's 2020.
Right.
That being said, there is with this a little bit different take on that, Michael, is there's like I just have a new client starting today. He and his salesperson, his name's Cody. He's in IT and he is inundated. His sales are growing like 100% because everyone needs to go to the cloud to manage their workforce offline.
Right.
I have people that are in HR. They need to manage their workforce differently. So there's all this opportunity as you're moving to the remote workforce. And like you, my business, I've been remote for 3.5 years. Before that in sales, I went to my boss and said, look, you want me to drive 45 minutes to come into the office only to go out and do, back then it was in-person cold calls. And this is back in the 90s. And they said, oh, from that day forward, before I had my own business, I always looked to work for someone remotely. Now the workforce, a lot of people aren't going to want to go back to the office. And so I can see when this is over, the infrastructure is going to be in. And so businesses have to be able to adapt. And so we don't like to learn like this, but as you said, sometimes when we have things that are going on like this, it helps us be more focused so that we can address that problem.
Yeah. So I think that gives us opportunity, obviously. And I think, so the second thing we talked about, and this happened the last time, was people are going to start either being freelancers or starting small businesses. I think that's going to probably be out of necessity for some people because people aren't going to want to be idle and they're not, you know, they're going to feel, they're probably going to exit some type of business and go into another one is my guess that is less dependent upon those old structures and ideas.
Yeah.
And then I guess the other thing that I'm seeing is, how do you put it? Will this be, I think there's going to be a massive recovery because they're just going to flood the market with money. But that doesn't mean that it might be another jobless recovery. That might be a trailing indicator where it's like, if you go to 20, 30% unemployment, those people are going to have a lot of time on their hands and they're going to be scrambling, right? And I think they're going to find that if they go back to try to get the same gigs, they may not exist anymore.
Yeah, there's definitely going to be something that happens in here. And I'm not a speculator or doomsayer or anything like that.
No.
I don't know. But I know that there's going to be, I think the marketplace is forever changed.
I agree. That's kind of my point. Not to be negative about it. It's the opposite. It's to say people, like, first of all, I think what's going to really change out of this is education.
Right.
Because I think that suddenly all the kids are at home until the summer.
Right.
And now you're seeing what you're teaching your kid.
Right.
Firsthand.
Mm-hmm.
And people are going to evaluate that. They're going to be like, why do you need to learn this?
Right, right, right. Yeah.
And then they're also going to go, why do I want to send you back to that environment?
Right. I think, And so there's good things. I have two content writers. What I do is I'll have a content idea and then I'll send them a Voxer message and then they'll create the content from it. one has five kids, one has four kids. And so they're both stay-at-home moms, and it's difficult having your kids with you all the time. And so it's stressful. As I was talking to them, they were also seeing the positive side where they get to see some things they didn't realize that was going on with their kids. One child is autistic, and so they're able to serve them in a different way that was before, and they didn't realize there was a problem. And so they also see the positive side, like you said, with education. It's just like, no, why? And this is the new thing with education. It's like, because they have to, here's the answer, but then they have to do like 20 minutes of understanding, discussing exactly how they got to the answer.
Yeah.
It's like, why? What relevance does it have in the workplace?
There's probably the learning style, the things that they're learning, and then even the concept of like, well, why am I doing all of this that's so intense and then being given homework? And I think for a lot of people, it's just a way to, you're realizing these ideas of how to educate people have nothing to do with the real outcome.
Right.
Right. This is meant to, so you can take more tests, so you can get to another level to get more pieces of paper, as opposed to, well, very practically, this is, what do you want to do, kid? And I think there'll be a shift there. And I think there'll even be a shift of the concept of why are we warehousing kids in this way? Like, yeah. I don't have visibility to them. They're going to this other location. If I'm working at home, couldn't they be here with their teacher online? Couldn't they go to smaller groups that are more productive? Like, and I always go, give me my voucher.
Right.
Uh-huh. Well, I'll be my voucher. I think people are going to say that.
Right. Well, it's interesting. I was seeing someone interviewed on Impact Theory, if you're familiar with that.
Yeah, great.
Yep. And I can't remember the guy's name. I've watched it several times. I just watched it yesterday, and he was terrible in school. And so through being terrible in school, he's dyslexic and all sorts of different, he had problems reading. He's created a whole learning way. And I don't know if he calls it a university, based on sports and how we compete. And he's taken that into like the, math, science, and all this. So he's made it interesting. And now kids are getting information out that's practical that they can apply and take. And they're really enjoying it, as opposed to memorizing facts and different things. Because education just, it gives us just enough information to know that we need more.
Right.
It doesn't show us how to take this thing. And then here's the transition from information to how you apply it to the workforce or to your business.
Well, and I think my other point about this too, and you're hitting on it, I think, in a sense, is right now what people need to be able to do is learn rapidly and adapt.
Right.
As opposed to do this monolithic style where, why do I need 4 years to master a skill so that you can give me authorization and then go do the thing, right? Whereas right now what people need to do is recognize opportunity, learn a certain amount to be functional, and then deal with it to bring money in.
Yeah.
Or to, here's another good example, which is we've seen beer makers and alcohol manufacturers suddenly making hand sanitizer.
Exactly.
And yeah. We may not like it, but that's an essential thing. And then you see like Elon Musk saying, hey, I'm going to make, and there's the perfect example of a guy that's got that mentality, which is I'm going to start making ventilators with you. Show me how to do it.
Yeah. And that's the beauty with America and the innovation, the ingenuity and everything. Is that when we're down, we look to adapt. And that's why I'm not, and this is not a political statement. It's just like governments don't, with military and some different things, and yes, we need government, but they're not there to be innovative and turn things around quickly. It's the businesses and those that innovate that could come alongside and come up with ideas and fill in the times of need. And that's what we're seeing, come forth with. I think Ford and GMC or something is creating ventilators or respirators or all those different things that they just changed and adapted. I think, what's really cool point here, you were saying something, I was thinking about something, Michael. So in the school system and changes being needed, I was thinking about collaboration, because we always talk about collaborating with people, or rappers do, right?
Right.
Rappers get it. Rappers collaborate and they reach each other's audience and grow exponentially. In school, if you collaborate, it's called cheating.
Yeah.
Right.
So it's so crazy you said that. It's so funny.
I actually have someone who does kind of very similar thing as me, and we were having a discussion like this, and this is something that I can tell people to do. Reach out to people in your competitors. I don't sell and compete anymore. I used to most of my life. Now I look to serve and collaborate. So here we are with this guy. We collaborate. I interview him. Then he interviews me. It's a Zoom meeting. And then I share my interview of him. He shares his interview of me. And we're coming from a place of abundance instead of scarcity. It's not a right. zero-sum game. If I take this customer, then you're going to miss out on a customer.
Yeah.
People really respect you when you collaborate and you're not looking at it's. I mean, that's, I think, one of the main things that's going to come out of this. Those people that innovate, is they're going to actually start working with what they call their competitors previously.
Do you mind if I share something on my screen with you for a sec?
Sure.
So I think I'd mentioned to you that I'd started this, and this was my weekend project of starting my.
What if I said no?
I wouldn't do it.
Go ahead.
I'd be like, what's wrong with you? So I'm going to share this just because what you're saying is really resonating with me because I've had this idea for a while, and people kind of don't remember this Japanese concept of a keiretsu. And I don't know if you know anything about it, but a keiretsu is a conglomerate of cooperative companies. And if you go back in time, because I've been writing about this, I was supposed to have my first event on March 18th. It got canceled like every other event.
Sure.
For Founders Pack. And the whole intention of it is to come up with a new structure of business where there's a you form your own pack of cooperative ventures. And the keiretsu model is really interesting because it's what you said, which is, you know, there's always going to be competition, but you know, why are we competing? We have all these one man shops or 10 man shops, whereas we need a structure where we can cooperate and help each other grow. And that's kind of what you're alluding to. And I think it's a mentality, but you know, what I'm evangelizing in this is really a model that says, look, there's this model in Japan that came out of World War II. And in World War II, Japan was devastated to radioactive ashes. And the US kind of banned this model at first. And then they realized, no, these guys are what drives this unique economy. And right. I think there's a lot to learn from that, which is who's a good ally and who can you have formal alliances with? And the characteristics of a keiretsu are that they have cross shareholdings and they also form around a bank that has patient capital. So how valuable would that be today where if you were, you know, we have all these small businesses, but if they were in an actual structure where they could help each other and they had a bank at the center of them that had patient capital right now. It'd be tremendously. So I think.
It sounds cool. You have like some practical things to actually go through. I think it sounds. Yeah. I mean, this may be something that we can learn. You know, history always repeats itself.
Right.
So this is really cool.
So that, you know, I started thinking, I was like, oh my God, I need to push the accelerator on this. Even though my event is postponed.
Right.
This right now would have been very valuable for people in certain industries. Sure. Everyone.
Right.
Where you had, number one, people that you trust and have similar mindset to and can mastermind with. And then you had equity and, you know, affiliate built in. And I think now we have the technology where if you have a bunch of these businesses, it's very practical to share data and relationships in a secure way that everybody can leverage, right? So that,
yeah.
And I'm like, oh my God, I wish I had almost pushed the, you know, I wish I had my act together on this a year ago because it would have probably helped people a lot more now.
Yeah, well, maybe people are more receptive to it now.
I think you might be right.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah, so I can see where out of this, I'm hoping that a lot of people, and you know, whether it's yourself or whoever, understand like, wow, there's a lot of benefit to this. We shouldn't be fighting it out. We should have a financial interest in each other's success, and we should have a way to mastermind together that's mm-hmm. not about just, you know, that's very practical. Because what's interesting about these keiretsu too is they have something called President's Club. And it's all the chairmen and presidents of these companies like Mitsubishi, Matsui, Sumitomo, like these massive conglomerates.
Right.
And they would do lunch club every Friday.
Cool. It's kind of like how Vistage is now. It's a CEO roundtable where they come together and talk from different industries and give and people pay $10,000 a year to be a part of it.
Right. Whereas I think, you know, there's another way to do it that maybe there's a little bit of money to fund it, but more importantly, if you had 30 to 50 ventures that were similar to yours, or they had the similar customer, but they were complementary.
Like right.
You do your thing. This guy does this thing. And then there's common services, which is technology, talent, relationships, right. Data.
Right. That's tremendous value. And if you're going into a company providing these five different services, it's going to be hard to ever get you out of there.
I think so. So
unless
I can
other companies come alongside to do that.
Yeah. And not to pump that concept, but I think it goes back to your point, which is people are probably receptive to new ideas now. And the most important thing I think is, in times of stress, is to see the opportunity and to have at least an idea and a pathway, right?
Yeah.
And what you need more is not to freak out, but to know there are things you can do and you can start working on these new things. And the most important thing right now is the ability to adapt and learn.
Yeah. And the only way to do that, and you know, I'll even finish up with this, is it's easy. I can go through my Facebook feed for maybe 60 seconds and start feeling anxious and whatnot because there's, you know, we're going to die. We have a cure. And there's just, it's usually more about along the lines, we're going to die quickly and horrible deaths, you know? And so I can get anxious about that. So the one thing that's important within this environment, be able to control stress is first and foremost is what we control, what goes into our mind. Very important to understand the facts and all that. Yes. But I mean, it doesn't take us, but a Google search to find out what's the update and what's going on to keep your family safe. You know, we don't need to keep filling our minds and get every single update. You know, I was in quarantine for a couple of weeks. I went to the store for the first time. On the way to the store, I got an update on my phone. Is it safe to go to the grocery store? I'm like, oh my gosh, okay, I need to turn that notification off. So it's like, I mean, it's hard not to allow fear to grasp us. So those things out of our control, you know, focus what goes into our mind, those things out of our control, don't. You can control your behavior and how you respond. If you respond, then you're in control of your fears. If you react, your fears are controlling you.
Very good advice. That is very timely too. Because we all have to, like, I think all, what you just described pushes you into survival mode, and it's the flight or, you know, fight stuff that people think those are just words, but the reality is they're biology.
Yeah. No, we struggle with it. And anything that's not familiar, not good, but familiar, that's our comfort zone. We say, oh, good. We get out of here. I'm back in my comfort zone. It feels good. No, that's familiar. Outside of our comfort zone is where we thrive, is if we allow ourselves to. But we're just a society where we've been very comfortable. I mean, I can get everything at my fingertips in a matter like that. I mean, I can order something on Sunday and Amazon deliver it Sunday morning first thing. Mm-hmm. And so anything that breaks our comfort zone and throws us outside of it, we want to go screaming and crawling back. But that's not, we're here, as I said in the beginning of this, I am here for such a time as this.
I think you're right on the money on that. Okay, Chaz, I want to be conscious of your time. A couple of things. First is, you know, how can people get in touch with you? And especially in this time, what should they be reaching out to you for help with?
Yeah. So just if you Google search Chaz Horn, C-H-A-Z, Horn, H-O-R-N, LinkedIn, just join me on LinkedIn, and this put Michael in the connection message, okay? And do that, because I have right now about 500 connection requests, okay. And I'm very selective, because usually I'll connect with someone on LinkedIn. This is the wrong way to do it, by the way. And all of a sudden, spam, links, attachments. That's not how you do it, people, okay? Yeah. So what you need to do right here and now, reach out to me and I'll talk. I'm not going to pitch you or sell you. If you want to have a 20-minute conversation, I'll see where you are to see if I can help. And if I can help, we'll schedule a more in-depth conversation. Worst case scenario, we'll figure out how to best network on LinkedIn. I'm collaborating with a lot of different people. Right now, go to your clients, listen to them, okay? From that, innovate with the ideas, and then execute on those ideas. So listen, serve, listen, innovate, and then execute. That's what you should do. So reach out to people and have an open discussion about the good, the bad, and the ugly, and you'll see opportunities and listen. Key, don't talk, listen. If you listen to understand, you'll uncover all sorts of different opportunities and ways to serve your clients right here and now that you could take into the marketplace and serve your prospective clients.
I love it. That's amazing advice. And so people, if you're reaching out on LinkedIn, it's Chaz Horn on LinkedIn, and reference either Automate and Grow or Michael Devolano or something, Michael.
Yeah, reach out to Michael. Great guy.
Cool. Okay, a couple quick things. First, if you are the sum of the five people that you spend the most time with, who do you, Chaz, spend the most time with?
Wow. It'd probably be like Tom Bilyeu, because I watch The Impact Theory like 2 times a day. I've seen all of those so many times. The funny thing is Tom Bilyeu is all about, it's all about brain chemistry. I mean, that's how he thinks about something. And I'm big into my faith as my foundation. I've learned to learn from people I don't totally agree with. And because of that, it's really helped me grow in my life, as opposed to, oh, you don't believe in this, then I'm not going to listen to you. I used to think that way. But probably like Tom Bilyeu, Tony Robbins, Gary Vaynerchuk, Jocko Willink is a big one.
Awesome. Yeah.
David Goggins. Oh, and another one I'll throw in there too is what's the old book? How to Win Friends and Influence People. I probably listened to that like 200 times, and I'm constantly Dale Carnegie.
I got this mixed up.
A combination of all those people is kind of, am I supposed to come up with a name or? Yeah.
That's a valid answer, which is that you're spending time with people that have the right ideas that you want.
Yeah. And Evan, I'll give Evan Carmichael a shout out. He's a YouTube guy and he has people's top 10. And so if you have 15 minutes, it's Evan Carmichael's, Tony Robbins' top 10, you know, Tom Bilyeu's top 10, wow. Gary Vaynerchuk's top 10, you know, Warren Buffett's top 10. So anything where I can get information and its value, I'm sure there's so much out there. So it would be a combination of all those people. And they all have a different slant on different things. And so I don't have a specific, but I listen all of them equally.
I love it. How are you, Chaz, changing the world?
How am I changing the world? Great question. So when you hear me, I'm like, man, I'm just like, this is how we think. I go back into my scarcity, I'm nothing, when I hear that question. And that's not how we should hear that question. That's not how I want to hear the question. I'm changing the world by meeting people where they are, one person and as a group, because I have clients as a group, individually and as a group, helping them understand their potential and then helping them realize their potential and then celebrating with them, challenging them through the process. So at the end of the day, no matter how long I'm with them, I can see that they've made a change in their business, in their life, and that's impacted all their sphere of influence. So in serving people, I have a heart for serving people. I usually reach out to the homeless. I guess I don't know what people are doing with the homeless right now. I guess they're shelters or whatnot, but yeah, I usually go and sit down and talk with them a couple of times a month. I haven't been for probably about 6 weeks now.
I love it. That's a great answer. Okay. The final thing is, when we have interesting people on the podcast, we like you to nominate an interesting person that you know that you could introduce us to. So who would you, Chaz, like to introduce us as a future guest of Automate and Grow? We typically talk to experts and entrepreneurs about their journey and how they help people and what they're doing uniquely in the world. So who would you, Chaz, like to nominate as a future guest?
Well, probably an interesting person would be Michael Fritz Morse. He's an automation guy.
Oh, okay.
And so he's actually one of my clients from several years ago, and he's constantly posting on LinkedIn. Good guy. And to see him grow his team, very authentic and real guy, that would be one. And let me just give you a bonus one. Okay.
Sure.
So someone else would be really good if you can get a hold of her. Is Shanae Murray, is I think how you pronounce her name, her last name, Shanee, and last name is Moret. She's a business owner and she went from nothing, single mom, cancer daughter who was in the hospital. Her employer was threatening her because she was spending time with her hospital daughter in the ICU, to starting her own business with another woman in a similar position. And they've taken it to a multi-million dollar business in a couple of years. She's just a cool person. She's always looking to serve people.
Cool.
So
is it MedSnake Media? Does that sound right?
Yeah, that's it. That's it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Terrific. Well, those are both terrific nominations, Chaz. So we'll reach out to Michael and Shanae. I think I said Shanae correctly, but
right.
You didn't. Ray.
Right.
And Chaz, I want to thank you and acknowledge you for the good work that you're doing. And I appreciate you being on the Automate and Grow podcast.
Right. Social distancing online. We can still get fist bumps. Boom.
Boom. Thank you very much for being here today. Appreciate it. And we will see you on the next episode of Automate and Grow.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you.